To order the meeting of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission for Friday, June 12, 2020. Thank you everyone for joining us and good morning, Amy. The first item on the agenda today is a commission discussion items. Who would like to start off?
Well, Larry, I could with Kim. I think the ADA motion is the first item up there.
Yes, sir.
So I'll give a little overview and Kim chime in. But I think you saw it was circulated that the ADA committee put forth their recommendations in terms of projects that they want to be working on throughout the state. And for the amount of projects that they're undertaking, they're asking for $9,000, which is really a pittance for what they do. This is a different committee in that it reports to the commission, and we think it's the only committee that reports to the commission. So the question is, and I don't know the answer, in the past when they've had funding, or even if they have, and I'm not sure what that has been, if it has been, what pot of money did that funding come from? So I throw that out, I support the motion. They're doing a lot of projects throughout the state, and I think we've seen them testify in front or present in front of the commission. They do good work that is necessary, and I think is needed more and more. So, Kim, I'll turn it over to you.
I don't have a lot to add. It's just they have come to us for funding before, and we've just kind of acknowledged the important and really good work that they do. The proposal is to develop more accessible blinds, work that they've been doing. They want to get them in all the regions. We've generally just kind of nodded and supported it. Because of our current budget situation, we decided we probably should ask where the funding comes from and if there might be $9,000 available for this committee to carry out its good work. I'm kind of looking at Nate, and I see he's unmuted himself. So,
Nate. He had his hand up. Go ahead, Nate.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everybody. This is such a neat group of people that volunteer their time and help us with all kinds of ADA issues. And typically, they will we work with them to help us prioritize a lot of the investments that we make. And occasionally they've identified projects that are above and beyond even what we've planned or aware of an urgent need. And so in the past, we've used everything from some duck stamp money to different operating dollars. We've turned to Tim Burns on the capital budget to apply minor works funding. And so when I saw that this motion was put forward, my recommendation for you all is absolutely we can cover this and happy to work with the committee to identify that funding to get that squared away.
Thanks, Nate. Then I would propose that we all nod absolutely.
Yeah, I would go along with that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all. Any other commissioner discussion points this morning?
Okay. Larry, I'd like to make some comments if I could.
Sure.
And that is to thank you. I just would like to acknowledge this period that we're in with the movement that has become very visible, Black Lives Matter. They've called for a general strike in Washington today. We're obviously not honoring that, but they're bringing forward again issues that our nation faces. We try to do some legal fixes and then things seem to fall back. But one of the things that I've noticed about the current activities is they really are being more direct and telling us about our white supremacy and the lack of insight that we have in the racism of our nation. And it exists in the work that we do. I recreate outdoors. I don't see the diversity of our population while I'm out recreating. The environmental and conservation movements tend to not recognize the institutional racism that our diverse populations, our minority populations tend to suffer more from the degradation of the environment than the white majority. We had the recent incident in Central Park in New York where a black birder was questioned by a white woman just to show the difficulty in recreating outdoor if you are a diverse population. But what I wanted to acknowledge is our department is working on this. And Marvin Williams, who's been on board for about a year, is showing incredible leadership. And then we have our diversity advisory committee that's been working for several years. We are acknowledging this the department is looking into itself and trying to understand these issues. And I just wanted to note that and celebrate it and celebrate what's going on right now with Black Lives Matter bringing these issues to the forefront.
Thank you, Kim. Well
said. Those are my comments.
Anyone else? Okay. Thank you. Any other commissioner discussion issues today? If not, we'll move to the meeting minute approval. Okay. Meeting of minute approval for the May 14-15 meeting. Would someone like to make a motion?
I'll move to approve the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission May 13th, 14th, 2020 minutes as submitted.
Smith will second.
Just a point of clarification. My agenda says May 14 and 15. Nikki, what are the precise dates? I want to make sure.
14, 15. Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner Thorburn's motion has been adjusted. So, okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Thorburn, a second by Commissioner Smith. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you. We are now at committee reports, and so I guess we'll start on the top row here. I've got, I see on the top row on my screen, I got Brad, Kim, you folks start in any order you see fit, Kim and Brad, and then we'll move on to Barbara and others.
Yeah, Habitat Committee didn't meet yesterday.
So. Okay. Kim, you have several, I think. You're muted, Barbara, or Kim. There you go, Kim.
Okay. Yes. The Wolf Committee meeting was held at 1 p.m. on June 10th, Wednesday, and we had several things on the agenda. Most of the time was spent updating our current situation with our wolf population. I should just mention we had all four of us committee members, that's Barbara, Jim, Amali, and me. We had the Wolf staff, including Steve Fazangra, who's now the Wolf coordinator and in an interim position. In terms of wolf population activities, grazing season opened, the wolves are as busy as the cattle. Unfortunately, we've had depredations in a couple of packs in eastern Washington. Those are being evaluated, and the recommendations are going through in terms of approach are going through evaluation. The producers with the depredations have been using non-lethals. The one pack is in one of the more chronic problem areas. So we had discussion about that. There is a lot going on policy-wise with wolves as well. We did talk about translocation SEPA. This has been before us for a while. Current conservation and management plan mentions translocation as a possible tool for the wolf population, and we have folded that SEPA into the full post-recovery SEPA so that we will have translocation potentially as a tool for wolf management in the future. And then finally, as you know, we're looking forward to the periodic status report. We decided that it would be important for the population modeling to be done by a third party. That third party is a postdoc at University of Washington, and that person is on board. We will be having a Wolf Committee meeting in early July, actually, to meet the postdoc and discuss the modeling and be able to ask him questions and make sure that our questions will be covered as that work goes forward. My second committee that I'll report on, or I should just pause here and ask if any of the committee members want to add anything to that. So the Wildlife Committee meeting, it wasn't quite as long as the Fish Committee meeting yesterday, but we did have to extend it beyond its originally scheduled time because we've got some real hot topics going on in wildlife. We as you know, have been looking at predator management we've been looking at it in the context of public safety. We had also wanted to understand more predator management in the context of prey management or our ungulate populations, our game populations. So we had a very in-depth presentation from Brock Haynes yesterday, learning more about how we define at-risk game herds and populations, how those, where the numbers came from, the many factors that go into the evaluation, when a decision might be made that predator management needs to become part of imperiled herd population. And we had a chance to ask lots of questions and understand that more than what was put forward in the March meeting where this issue really came to the forefront. We also got a preview of the grazing program review that's going on. As you know, I think we got a figure that about a quarter of our wildlife areas have grazing as part of their management, livestock grazing as part of their management. And that commission policy, and as well as WACs that oversee this grazing program. And that program's been under review for a while. So we were updated on that. There were several points. The policy and what changes staff sees will be needed, the WAC and the WAC revisions that they're working on, the new monitor grazing programs that come on board, and wolf livestock conflict potential and how that will be managed on our wildlife areas. As I said, this was a preview. This will be coming before the full commission in the near future. And we had a little bit of time for hot topics, and there is a hot topic that's coming before us this meeting, and that is shooting target shooting on wildlife areas. We've had a tremendous amount of public testimony, so they're going to spend time at this meeting reviewing the public testimony in depth, and actually probably slow down the timeline a little bit on when that rule will be finalized. And with that, I'll ask the Wildlife Committee members if they have anything to add, but that would be my report.
Kim, this is Molly.
Sure enough.
I hope I'm correct about this, because I don't want to correct you if I'm not correct, but I was thinking that Paul said that it was 11% of department lands had grazing on it, but that needs to be verified. I'm not positive.
Yeah. You know, I think you're right. I think that's correct. Thank you for correcting me.
Okay, Commissioner Baker, would you like to do the big tent to review? And then we'll go to Dave Grable is going to be kind enough to do the Fish Committee report.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Carpenter. Big Tent Committee met yesterday. We had all four committee members plus Commissioner Anderson. The Big Tent Committee works a bit differently in that we basically just have conversations. We, unlike the other committees, we don't have specific current problems we're trying to solve. And so what we sort of do is look to the future and try to solve problems that we can see on the horizon. The three things we talked about specifically yesterday were the development of the new strategic plan. We talked about the process by which that plan is coming to become real. And that is very organic. We're going to hear quite a bit more about the strategic plan later today. But the thing, so, and we didn't even, we went through the executive summary yesterday, but more that we talked about process. And I think I'll hold those comments until later today, except to say that the Big Tent Committee has been following this thing for a year and a half now. But we have deliberately not been overly directive. We will, as it, we have made the decision that this needs to come from the people that we serve and from our extremely diligent staff. There will be some discussion about how much work they've been doing on it. But so I'm going to save comments on that. We also talked then, number two was a discussion about our role as commissioners and the policies that we currently have in place, and making, we had some discussion about how we say a lot that we're here to develop high level policy and not micromanage. And yet when you look at the policies that we've developed, that isn't necessarily directly reflected. So we ended that discussion with me offering to write up a little paper on what I see could happen. Again, this was, there is no no sharp words, no sides taken. This was just a discussion. And the real thing is how, when we get the strategic plan in place, however it looks, what our role is in making that thing operational and not just something that, well, the old saying was sits on a shelf. I guess it would now be sit on a file in a computer somewhere. And then the third thing that we just touched on was some of the comments that have been made by our advisory committees on the strategic plan. One of them hit me, which was, well, actually two or three people said this, is that we need to have, the commission needs to get out more in a more formal way and have regional advisory committees. And we talked about that, and that led straight to a talk about how each one of us does things differently. And there's nothing to prevent us from being very apparent in our regions or taking our job on a more statewide basis. We left it there. I only want to mention it in case anybody has strong feelings one way or the other. The point was made that I don't think any of us knew exactly what we were getting into when we accepted these appointments. It is a ton of work for very, very little pay. But I think we all have our jobs, and I think where we left it is that we would continue to operate as we each individually see fit. So I will follow Kim's lead and offer to the other committee members whether there's anything that I left out. All right, I guess we're on to Fish.
Okay, we're going to go on as Commissioner Graybill was kind enough to agree to take the notes and do the report. And after the Fish Committee report, I also want to mention Commissioner Kehoe, as I was having electronic problems. Commissioner Kehoe chaired the meeting, and it was very kind of him. After we get done with Dave Graybill's report on the Fish Committee, we will go to Commissioner McIsaac, who I think has a bit to say as well on the Columbia River Work Group discussions. Commissioner Graybill.
Thank you, Chair. We had an ambitious agenda yesterday that included the hatchery policy review, 3619, language development of that, north of Falcon, the Puget Sound Management Plan, and also the Willapa Bay Progress Report. Thank you, Robert Kehoe, for chairing the meeting. And Fish Committee members were all present, Larry Carpenter, Don McIsaac, Bob Kehoe, and myself. Also in attendance was Kim Thornburn and Jim Anderson and also Barbara Baker. At one point, there were 73 participants in this call. On the policy, most notably, the policy now is known as the Anadromous Salmon and Steelhead Hatchery Policy. And what we were addressing was the issue of the language for the document that it's being developed right now. Due to the demands and the time of our staff, Ron Warren notably, and also the Fish Program Science and Management staff, by the new CARE program from the federal government, they've been assigned and tasked with the duties of analyzing what the impacts of that and talking about how to distribute those funds. And that is taking up a lot of their time, and they felt they may not be able to meet deadline on the language development. Commissioner McIsaac suggested that the Fish Committee members take on that duty and try to help so that we can move this forward and try to stay on deadline with it. And our other committee members agreed to that. Jim Anderson stressed that it's very important that we keep the momentum up on this and try to keep the deadline. There's a lot of moving parts, and it's an important policy for the very near future, and it's important that the work is not interrupted. Commissioner Thornburn also stressed that as we address the language, that we remember the overarching goal is recovery. and that issue is reflected in the policy. There were five public comments on this, and they ranged in from comments that were essentially the hatcheries aren't the problem, that we need mitigation for loss by habitat, and we need more input from, say, the science divisions of our tribal co-managers. And also, we need to compensate for losses due to pinniped predation and as well as the avian predation on the river. We also, not just the river, excuse me, Puget Sound as well, but we also received a very detailed letter from the Lower Columbia River Fishery and Recovery Board. And I think that's available through the website, the department's website, and they make some very important points, and we will be addressing those issues that they mention in that letter. And they pointed out potential conflicts in language to recovery and stress the adherence to the all-age approach is important. Next on our list was North of Falcon, and this was a very abbreviated report on this. There was a lot of discussion. As you know, North of Falcon is a very contentious issue that involves our co-managers and setting the seasons for Puget Sound and the coast recreational and commercial fisheries. Kyle Addicks did the presentation. It was noted that this year we were minus very key members from staff that had been working with our co-managers and our people for a long time. And we lost those to other positions within the department. And that there were certain impacts due to that. But one of the things that came out again was that the Stillaguamish issues still are a driver in constraining commercial and recreational fishing on Puget Sound. One of the things that came up during public comment was, in fact, would having a Puget Sound Chinook management plan in place provide the necessary relief to these difficult discussions? Commissioner Thornburn reminded us that if we had our that in place, we still face the same challenges for conservation. And if in fact we decided to obtain our own permit for NOAA to prosecute our fisheries, that we would also face those same conservation challenges. One of the reasons that North of Falcon was protracted this year was a disagreement between the tribes on their fisheries, and that delayed the process to the 11th hour once again. And again, we had very active and extensive conversations regarding obtaining our own permit. What would be the impact of having our own Puget Sound Chinook management plan agreed to by the tribes? And those discussions, of course, as you know, is ongoing. On Willapa Bay, Chad Herring is conducting the review of the policy on Willapa Bay. He reports that it is 75% complete. He expects it to be completed by the end of July. August, we should be able to have something on the website for public to review. September, we should have a presentation to the commission for the approval of the draft policy that can be released to the public for comment. And we ended with Ron Warren describing the process and criteria of distributing the $50 million of government funds to provide relief primarily to the fisheries sector of our state. And it was noted that this only applies to the saltwater. Freshwater activities are not under the, do not qualify under the CARES Act. So that, there was a lot there. I'm sorry if I'm too brief. If I invite other commissioners and those who were in attendance to fill in any gaps you feel I left, but that's my report for the Fish Committee.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Graybill. Commissioner Kehoe or Commissioner McKaysey, do you have anything to add?
No, Commissioner Graybill did a good job. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner McKaysey?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to Commissioner Graybill for giving that report. I just want to mention one follow-up for the full commission maybe to consider on the matter of the North of Falcon and the Chinook RMP reports that we talked about. Yesterday, we had a discussion about what was a little bit of a surprise coming out of last January and February, that the Stillaguamish hatchery fish, the impact ceiling on those fish would be a significant determinant of fishing in Puget Sound. And at that time, there was an assessment that was the expectation it would not. And it turned out that they were. And as the forecast
John,
came in.
We've lost your audio.
Okay, let me see. Testing 1, 2, 3.
Are you good?
We can hear you again, Don.
There we go.
Okay. As it turned out, the Stillaguamish hatchery fish were a determinant in the North of Falcon business for 2020. And we've got a lot of public comment on the winter blackmouth fishery being zeroed out as a result of that and the mix of everything. But it apparent that the Stillaguamish hatchery ceiling came into play. When we look at the next 10 years on the RMP, the commission endorsed the RMP going forward with this impact ceiling in place under the presumption that it would not be a determinant in a weak stock bottleneck determinant. But it was in 2020. So we asked the question yesterday, well, how often might that happen again? And the staff said, well, that's a pretty difficult question to answer because projecting over the next 10 years, all the different mixes and ups and downs of all the stocks that come into play, it's pretty hard to tell whether or not that would be a determinant in what mix of things. However, after sleeping on it, I think that it's still useful for the commission to be connected to what's going on in the 10-year plan. It's not being submitted as we had thought it would be in the spring. And I think it's useful for the Fish Committee to continue to take a look at the Stillaguamish question. And if a very complex, finite, and certain exercise is beyond the scope of what people ought to do, some sort of an assessment, like maybe the one that said it's unlikely they're going to be a determinant, is something that I think we ought to put forward to the staff. And maybe in the fall, have the Fish Committee get another update on where we're at with the RMP and what are the expectations of whether or not the Stillaguamish hatchery fish are going to be in a different category of concern, that ceiling on their hatchery fish be in a different category of a concern than what we thought last February. There are some people out in the public who are concerned that the blackmouth fisheries over the winter are going to be zeroed out for the next 10 years because of this. And that's not something that, as a policy matter, we have been considering. So my suggestion is that we continue this dialogue on the RMP at the Fish Committee level if the rest of the commission is comfortable with that.
Okay. Any other comments? And I would say I do agree with the importance of tracking this as per Commissioner McKaysey's comments. Any other?
Mr. Chairman? This is Jim Anderson, taking you up on the offer to have a little comment on this. I think it's real important that discussions continue to occur or be picked back up with regard to the Stillaguamish issue in general, and that I believe the director has plans to meet with the Stillaguamish tribe probably in the later part of this summer, and to move some things forward. I would hope that's still the case. That's a sticky wicket. If we ever get that sorted out, there's other sticky wickets. But having said that, I think it's real important that not a whole lot of time be wasted trying to move forward, trying to close some differences on this.
Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. Okay, anything else from any of the other commissioners at this moment? Okay, we will move into the Columbia River Work Group review with Commissioner McKaysing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll give two committee reports. There was a Columbia River Work Group committee meeting on May 27th and another one just past Wednesday. The work group met on May 27th by webinar, and all commissioners on the work group were present, along with Commissioner Anderson, legal counsel Joe Panesco, and staff members Ron Warren, Ryan Lothrop, and Nikki Klupfer. Approximately 45 members of the public also attended. The agenda that had been noticed and posted on the department website on May 19th was adopted unchanged. And at that time, public testimony was urged to occur consistent with the news release sent out on May 15th for this particular meeting. A detailed written summary is posted on the website, so I'll not read that as part of the meeting report. But a brief summary is as follows. We had a pretty lengthy public testimony period, and testimony was received from organizations and individuals representing East Side and West Side, upriver and lower river interests, speaking to recreational and commercial fishery perspectives, as well as conservation group perspectives. Testimony included representatives of two salmon recovery boards, Snake River Salmon Recovery Board and the Lower Columbia River Recovery Board. Several individuals indicated they would supplement their verbal testimony with written submissions and subsequently did so. It was noted that the webinar may have saved driving time to and from an in-person meeting, and we may have received more participation than an in-person meeting because it was more convenient in that regard. Without going into detail, the committee reviewed the seven technical analyses that were assigned at the March 11th work group meeting, reviewed the economic modeling information provided by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, that was originally scheduled for discussion at the November 18th, 2019 PRC meeting. We refined the allocation alternatives to a single alternative for each issue, including selecting some that were different than those adopted by the commission at the 2019 Spokane March meeting. And we reviewed and refined the draft policy language document as well. With regard to the meeting on Wednesday, June 10th, again, we met by webinar. All work group members were present, and there were approximately 40 participants on the webinar. And once again, we had a substantial amount of public comment, and the meeting went beyond the 4 hours that had been budgeted for it. We reached a final recommendation on recreational and commercial allocations for upriver spring Chinook and summer Chinook. Both of these are abundance-based approaches that provide a greater allocation to the sport fishery during periods of low abundance. And again, this is different than the straight 70-30 app allocation that was adopted in Spokane in March of 2019. We again reviewed the sequential matter of trying to refine the draft policy language document that has been on the table for quite some time. We received public comment on the wording of the purpose paragraph relative to the RCA mandate of the commission and the department. And the work group agreed to put the question forward to our legal counsel and fish policy director and report on that consultation response by the time the agenda item comes up later this afternoon under agenda item 8. In accordance with our adopted process, the work group reached a recommendation to the full commission regarding sending out draft revisions to policy 3620. For public review over the course of the summer until our August commission meeting, along with two supporting documents. This recommendation, including the draft revised language document, was posted on the website for our afternoon agenda 8. This was done yesterday, so thanks to Nikki Klupfer for her multitasking abilities to accomplish that. We'll wait and speak to these more in depth this afternoon under agenda item 8, where this does show on the agenda. And I would also note that this recommendation was a 2-to-1 vote. And so this afternoon, I think it'd be useful for the commission to hear the minority perspective and the rationale for passing this forward. That concludes my report. I'd ask if Commissioners Kehoe or Graybill have anything they'd like to add.
This is Commissioner Kehoe. No additions from me. Thanks, Don.
Thank you, Don. Not at this time. As you mentioned, we will have time for discussion later this afternoon.
Okay. Have I missed any committee reports that I don't have noted here? Okay. Thank you all for that. Appreciate it.